Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
Hi, Michelle Martin. Good morning. We know that markets have no emotions. How do we read today's market? U.S. shares finished broadly higher overnight. Asian markets in the green this morning as well. This amidst disease, riot, rising U.S.-China tensions. So the Dow finished up 1%. The S&P 500, Nasdaq were not far behind. We check in with what investors are talking about now with Jack Cousy, founder and director of VFS Group. Jack, how are you this morning?
I'm very well, Michelle. I'm becoming quite a regular on your show. I'm very happy about that.
Yes.
I'm very, very excited to be back, and I'm doing well. And I'm about to go out and have lunch after this in my first restaurant for 2 months. So I'm quite excited.
So you can eat outdoors now. Is it only al fresco, or can you sit indoors in Australia?
No, we're going to sit indoors. I'm going to get myself a bottle of wine. I'm not going to have the whole bottle of wine by myself, but yes. We are going out to lunch.
If so, there is ever a time for wine during lunch, it is today when you're eating out. That sounds terrific.
I promise, I didn't drink any wine before I came on. I made sure I was sober so I could talk markets as directly as possible.
One day we'll have to do a comparison, Jack. You might be better with a bit of wine in you. All right. Let's start with your overview of gains in the U.S. indices, okay? In the face of possible military action on streets in the U.S., President Trump has warned state governors to get tough on unrest on pain of him ordering military to the streets. So, Jack, we've seen the S&P 500, NASDAQ up 36, 39% respectively from the March 23rd lows. How long can gains continue against a backdrop of unrest?
Yeah, probably longer. I think you said it really correctly before I came on, Michelle. The market doesn't have a heart, doesn't have a soul, doesn't have emotions. It's made up of companies, you know, which trade, you know, on markets. I woke up, well, I was feeding my daughter when I listened to President Trump talk about bringing the military on the streets if, you know, states didn't bring in the National Guard. And then as soon as that occurred, we saw U.S. futures, you know, drop significantly. And then as the morning went through and went to the afternoon Australian time, we saw them rally. And, you know, we saw what we saw on markets last night. We saw another lead in terms of growth. On the U.S. dollar, it says, in God we trust. We should probably replace that to in the Fed we trust. And this is essentially what is leading global markets higher. There is, and we saw, I think we spoke about this last week, we have an enormous amount of free money in the markets. We have an enormous amount of liquidity. That is just driving markets higher, and it's kind of driving these catch-up trades. Now people are feeling of missing out of the market going to all-time highs. And what we saw possibly in March, where we saw, you know, a tech driving the market, we're seeing all sectors. You know, banks are rallying, airlines, you know, cyclical stocks are rallying, value stocks are rallying at this point in time. And that's because people believe, and investors believe, that the Fed is going to be more powerful than anything that we see. You know, Hong Kong, U.S.-China trade war, riots in the streets, or, you know, re-spiking cases or a second surge. What we saw last night in particular, if I just wanted to say, is some big data out of China. So we saw an 11% surge in new auto sales out of China. Now, if your listeners are thinking, why do autos matter? They tend to be a leading indicator. They tend to be a leading indicator of economic growth. That drove the market. And then we saw Germany, who's been a bit of a penny pincher for a long time, talk about further stimulus in Germany and the European economy, and that led the DAX higher, and the US followed. So we're at this amazing time in markets, and I'll give you just another one. Amazon went to the market last night and raised nearly $10 billion you know, in funding, which they don't need. You know, they got plenty of cash. And they raised it at around 15 basis points. So we're talking about 0.15, about $10 billion that they don't need, that they could put use. When their stock is at an all-time high, and normally if your stock is at an all-time high, you might issue shares and raise that money that way rather than take on debt. So that's where we are. It's just an enormous environment. There seems to be a lot of liquidity. You know, most of the companies that have gone to the market that are distressed have been funded. You know, Carnival Cruise has got funded. You know, a lot of these stocks that are going through some tough times seem to be getting that liquidity, and liquidity seems to be flush. And that's simply what's driving this market forward. What is the biggest driver going forward? Now, are central banks going to stay out? Probably not. So, you know, we probably won't see another 11% gain on the NASDAQ for the month of June, but I just think we're going to grind higher here.
All right, I'm going to ask you to go out on a limb because you've been quite prescient on this show. I was reading the words of Tim Dye. He's an economics professor over at the University of Oregon, and he's warned that stocks may actually repeat March's lows if troops are seen on the streets of America, because here's his thesis. He thinks that riots on the streets and the specter of military on the streets are going to throttle reopening progress and possibly lead to a second wave because these protesters are standing arm to arm, many with no masks with them. Do you agree that we could see a repeat of March lows?
I mean, if it goes on for 2 or 3 weeks, I think he's going to be right. You know, if we start to see this calm down over the next 3 to 4 days, I don't think we're going to see March lows. I honestly think March lows have been priced out of the market now. I think maybe we could have talked about a retesting March lows in April, but I just think that trade is gone now. And there are a few reasons. Central bank spending, which we just talked about, reopening of economies. The rates aren't going up. There's advancements in medicine. We're starting to see some type of new life come back. So I don't think we're going to retest March lows. But, I mean, have you ever seen the U.S. military on the streets? You know, we normally see the U.S. military in foreign countries, not on the streets of Minnesota or Indianapolis or New York. So nothing is out of the question. It is certainly eerie. If these protests go on for 3, 4, 5 weeks, and you know this country, this great country that has given us so much in terms of technology and development, you know, essentially descends into a civil war, then nothing is out of the question. But at this point in time, I think they'll get it under control, and I think we'll see some type of normalcy come back.
Yeah, well said. Good points there. Speaking of, you know, this company, this country that's given the world so much by way of tech, some say that American tech stocks, you know, led the rally recently because they were so perfectly positioned for an economy that had to transition indoors. Take Zoom, for example. Zoom's results out with a bang, beating everybody's expectations. You know, the big question prior to the results being released was, just because we need tech to stay at home doesn't mean we're going to pay for it. What do you make of Zoom's results?
Yeah. So here's a funny one for you. So I owned Zoom at $118. And the key term you must hear is owned, right? Because I sold it at $135. And it's the question that the point you brought up about paying for it. So my wife and I attended a Zoom party 6 or 7 weeks ago, and the host of the Zoom party had a Zoom, and when 45 minutes came up, we hung up and dialed again, right? It wasn't a paid subscription for the host of the Zoom party. And I thought to myself, you know, everybody's using Zoom. Is everybody paying for Zoom? And it seems like a lot of people are paying for Zoom. Just to put into perspective, this quarter, so they effectively, in one quarter, doubled their 21 guidance from $900 million to $1.8 billion. And this is just an incredible company. It's great technology. For example, at work we use Teams, and we don't use Teams for video. We go back to Zoom to use Zoom for video because it's just so easy to use. So I think it's an interesting point here. I mean, their PE is trading at a crazy level. They do have certain competition. You've got Teams and Microsoft. You've got Cisco Systems. But they've got some significant moats. It's just a great product to use. It seems to be a kind of like a, you know, a cool thing to use. We're talking about Zoom parties and getting ready for Zoom. Incredible quarter. Would I buy it here? No. But would I have the guts to short it here? Probably not. So I'm going to play the straight back here, Michelle, and say I'm a neutral on it. But just a phenomenal company. And, you know, it looks like it's going to be around for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, look at that. IPO'd at $36 a share, now trading at $200 a share. A gain of more than 500%. Really interesting. Yeah. So for investors who are interested in collaborative software tech, what is your view on this sector?
Yeah, I think it's going to continue to grow. You know, we talk about things that are going to change in the new economy, and it looks like that we're going to work from home more often. I mean, I take me for example. I used to go to work 4 days a week. I'm now going to work 2 days a week. So collaborative software like Teams, like Slack, like Zoom will continue to grow. I mean, you talk about a merger of perfect companies. Let's talk about a merger of Zoom and Slack. That would be wonderful, wouldn't it? It'd kind of give them the teams and are really good. I think this is going to continue to grow. I think companies, you know, you talk about Facebook, for example, who's pretty much saying the workers they can work from home for the rest of their lives. This will be a growing trend, allowing people to work from wherever they are, and that will mean that tech will need to get better. And the great thing we know about tech is that it's very, you know, improves really well. It reacts very quickly. So collaborative software, you know, CRMs are going to be really important going forward. So I expect these stocks and these companies to continue to see garner interest and continue to see their use rate increase, not only in work, but just in personal life and just communication socially. So expected to continue to grow and continue to watch, definitely.
All right. I picked up a good tip there. You can call back after 45 minutes. We've been so compliant here. You know, the moment 45 minutes is up, our happy hour is over, and we all go back to life. But gosh, nobody thought of calling back. Thanks, Jack.
Oh, no. And Michelle, that just a little tidbit. Its PE ratio, so its price to earnings, is now trading at 2,432. So for every dollar, you're paying 2,432 for every dollar of earnings on Zoom at this point in time. So take that how you want.
Yeah, and its market value, market cap. You want to take a guess at its market cap? I'll give you a hint. It is greater than the market value of America's four biggest airlines put together.
Yeah.
$59 billion U.S. dollars.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Really. All right, I can't remember the last time I filled up my car with petrol, but oil is back in the news again. The price of a barrel of Brent crude back above $40. West Texas crude trading higher as well, currently up more than 2.5% and approaching $38 a barrel. That's a big shift. It seems that production cuts by OPEC plus nations are kicking in. Jack, is there anything else driving the recovery in oil prices, or is that the main factor?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of both. So let's put this into perspective. We had nearly 18 million barrels by OPEC Plus, which is OPEC Plus Russia cut. It's the biggest, sharpest, quickest cut in oil production we've ever seen in human history. You also got the US producers who, we don't exactly have figures, but they're estimated to be cutting by nearly 1.5 to 2 million barrels a month. You know, it's market economics. You cut supply, price should increase. And we did see like a relaxation in terms of where they're storing these oil on tankers going forward, which led to those negative prices we saw in early May. So there, and then you have a combination of rising demand. I mean, people are going back to work. You know, I've been driving to work 1 or 2 days a week. Every time I drive to work, it seems to be taking me 3 or 4 minutes longer because people are getting in there. And you're having used car sales surge. So we've seen used car sales surge in the US and in China, the two largest economies, because people don't want to catch a bus.
Mm-hmm.
So they are the combination of the factors that I think we've gotten us to this, you know, pre-$40 a barrel. Now, I said on the show two weeks ago, do I believe it's going to get back to 50, 60? No. But my caveat is that inventories are still building. Long-term oil demand in general was taking a downward spiral before COVID. I think it's going to temper around here. I wouldn't be a buyer of oil. I'm not necessarily a buyer of oil ever. But, you know, you do have some really good factors that are leading to that price. We do have an OPEC meeting coming up in 2 to 3 weeks. I don't think they'll cut, and I think the market will take that as a bit of a shock. So I'd be, gun to my head, short oil rather than long oil, but I'm on the sidelines.
So for the investors who've just tuned in and maybe haven't heard your thesis on oil, do you think that prices are going to settle around this $40 level?
Yes, yes. Right. So my thesis on oil is the new tobacco. No one wants it. No one wants to touch it. The millennials don't want it. Fund managers can't include it. You look at the rise of ESG spending, ESG investment. You can't have anything that's in relation to oil, fossil fuels, or coal. So this sector, and I explain it this way, Michelle, sorry to segue. There is so much to look at as an investor in markets. So many sectors, so many industries. You know, sometimes you've got to cut things out. And anything to do with dirty energy, oil, fossil fuels, or coal, no matter how good the companies are, it's just simply a sector that I don't look at. It just allows me to concentrate on other sectors. And that's the reason why we're seeing swelling demand, and it's just not socially acceptable to use these kind of things going forward. Now, whether it's financially acceptable in the short term, probably not, but we're just moving away from this sector, and it's a secular trend that I believe is going to grow over time. It's just, you know, avoiding the worst house in the worst street, putting it that way.
All right. Well, speaking of, you know, there's so many things on an investor's radar. What is on your stocks to watch list, Jack?
Yes. Bit of a sector switch for me in the last couple of days. So about a month ago, or maybe 6 weeks ago, when I first heard your show, we were buying an iPay ETF, so mobile payments. We took some profits on that and exited. Looking to more industrial plays and infrastructure plays. So if we look at government spending, that's going to increase in terms of fiscal spending. The best way for governments to increase spending is to build things. So roads, highways, hospitals, education centers, etc. So switching to an ETF called PAVE, which is run by Global X. It's a global industrial ETF. On the back of that, I had a look at a bit of Caterpillar, you know, on the growth of that industrials and that move towards value. So they were two things that we picked up. In terms of a thematic play, a long-term play, I kind of like robotics going forward. I've always been a big fan. So I did pick up some more positions in some robotics ETFs around industrial production moving towards robots.
Mm.
So they were the big positional changes that I made. And I also increased my exposure into global banks. So U.S. banks, a little bit of European banks, and we did discuss Aussie banks. I just think their value, I think that's a reflationary trade as we start to open up economies. So they were the big positional changes that I made at the month of, in the month of May into June, to recap.
Fantastic. All right, let's take a closer look at what's happening with the Australian economy. RBA Governor Philip Lowe is saying the economy is going through a very difficult period, experiencing its biggest economic contraction since the 1930s. Australia's interest rates have been left on hold at a record low level of 0.25%. What do you think of the decision to not cut rates further?
Well, there's not much to cut, is there? It's like going to a birthday party and there's not much cake left, you know, and you wanna keep that cake, Michelle. I mean, I'm about to go have lunch. I want to save some dessert. No, I don't think any government in the world, well, I don't think any sane government in the world, sorry, any sane reserve bank or central bank in the world wants to go to negative interest rates, because the test case for negative interest rates has been Europe and has been Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And they are, no disrespect to those regions and countries, basket cases in terms of economies. And it's not just negative interest rates that have made them basket cases. It's a combination. But negative interest rates have not worked for them. It has not promoted economic growth. It's not promoted inflation. And it's made them, you know, lag behind, you know, Southeast Asia and the U.S. and economies like Australia. So I applaud them for not cutting. And I hope, you know, that the U.S. doesn't cut and go to negative, because it just doesn't work. I just don't believe that policy works. In terms of the figures that we got out of here, they are actually quite reassuring. I mean, GDP was forecast at -0.4. We came in at -0.3. You know, previously we were at 0.5. We were already slowing the economy. It's not like we were coming off, you know, enormous highs in terms of our GDP growth. The big figure we saw out of Australia was building approvals. I mean, actual was -1.8. And that was a forecast of -10.8. So if you want to talk about equity markets, we rallied 11% in May, our best month in quite a long time. So I think, and we commented about this 2 weeks ago, I think we're in the midst of a full-blown recovery. We seem to have the virus under control, better than most countries around the world. And, you know, from what I can see in front of me, we're getting back to work, which is essential for all economies around the globe, essential.
Well said, well said. So just to hammer in the point home, you're disagreeing with economists like St. Louis Fed economist Yiwen, who in a paper recently said negative interest rates could be needed for a V-shaped recovery in the U.S.
It's blasphemy, Michelle. It's blasphemy. As an economics student, it hasn't worked. I mean, if you can show me, I just point to you. Every time someone gives me a, I just point to Europe and Japan, and I say, tell me this has worked there, because it hasn't. And not only have they fallen behind in terms of economic growth, they don't have any companies that have emerged over the last 10 to 15 years. I mean, I think we've spoken about this. Can you name me a tech innovation company that's come out of Europe or Japan in the last decade? No, you can't. So it just hasn't worked for me. U.S. is still a strong economy previous to COVID, and central banks have a role, and I think central banks are overplaying their role in markets in general. I'll end on this because I think we're going to break. I don't know if we are. We could talk Every major crisis that's ever occurred, every major economic crisis that we've ever seen in human history, the Great Depression, the 87 oil crash, the 97 Asian economic crisis, the tech crisis, the housing crisis of the Great Recession in 2006-2007, every single one has been a credit crisis. Giving money to people or giving too much money to people that they can afford. Now, whether that's households or corporates or the central bank liquidity that we're pumping, eventually someone's got to pay it back. And that's my fear in the long term.
All right. Well, great talking to you as always. I'm not going to keep you from preparations for lunch. Have a great day.
Thank you so much. Have a lovely one. Thank you soon.
Jack Hoosie there, founder and director of strategy at VFS Group, joining us in Money and Me Live.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.